I've been asked to speak about what I call empathic communication, which is an adaptation, according to Srila Prabhupada's instructions and the teachings of the Acharyas, of nonviolent communication to Krishna consciousness. And the reason that I have adapted it to Krishna consciousness, well, first of all, I'm supposed to be a devotee, so that's why I adapted to Krishna consciousness instead of to some other religion. But the reason I've adapted it to Krishna consciousness is, well, let's talk. Tell the history, is because I have perceived amongst the devotee community many different conflicts, problems, issues, and so I wanted to find a way to, as Prabhupada said, you know, love and trust, to try to bring the devotees together with mutual understanding, and at the same time, respect diversity. As Prabhupada said, that the GBC should meet every year to discuss unity in diversity. So, of course, unity means how we're all one. Diversity means how we're all different. And I don't think we've actually done that so much yet, although it is Srila Prabhupada's instruction. So the unity means that we're all working to serve Srila Prabhupada Society, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and please Srila Prabhupada. And the diversity means that we actually all have different personalities, different propensities, different skills, different varnas, different ideas how to present Krishna consciousness. And sometimes these ideas, skills, varnas end up in conflicts between the devotees. And so I was very concerned about this, as I've seen many, many conflicts, as I mentioned before. And I wanted to find out how to serve Prabhupada by helping resolve the conflicts, not to eliminate conflicts. Conflicts are natural, they're good, they help us advance in Krishna consciousness. For example, we all have these internal conflicts, such as our material attachments on one side, and also our desire to be Krishna conscious and give up the material attachments on the other side. Last night I was giving a class, and I was mentioning the story that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur told about how the marriage party was trying to row across the river to get to the other side of the river to attend a marriage. And when they woke up in the morning after they had spent the whole night in the boat, they discovered they had not moved 1 inch or 1 meter, because you're all in Europe. And it was discovered the reason was that they had left the anchor in the, not in the water, but under the water. And they had not moved. So the moral of the story is that one has to sort of like pull up the anchor of material attachment if one wants to make spiritual advancement. However, we have these material attachments, and we want to pull the anchor up, so we have these conflicts, these internal conflicts going on. So there's internal conflicts, external conflicts, and so how do we resolve these conflicts? So therefore, in order to understand, or try to understand how to resolve the conflicts, I started studying different psychological texts, and also I took some courses, especially a very nice course I took from Brajavihari on mediation. I became a certified mediator. And taking this course, you know, I learned a lot. It was actually a really nice course. And I was disappointed to a certain extent because I found out through mediation generally, one would only deal with a specific issue, but not resolve the or transform the relationship between the different parties. And I considered it very important to transform the relationship between the different parties. The reason I consider it important is because, as Srila Rupa Goswami states in the Upadesha Amrita, that our movement actually goes forward, increases, by loving exchanges. Dadati pratigrnati guhyamakyati prichati bhunkte bhojate chaiva. And I think you're all aware of that particular verse. Giving prasadam, accepting prasadam, giving gifts, accepting gifts, revealing the mind in confidence, and hearing from others in confidence. So that's how our movement progresses. So until we can transform our relationships, then our movement will not progress that much. You know, so we have to have these loving relationships. So, then I started reading other literatures, particularly some of the literatures written by different psychologists like Maslow, and I learned some things from that, and I'll get into that in a second. And then I came across one particular psychologist, his name was Marshall Rosenberg, who was teaching and applying what Maslow taught. Now, I know this all sounds very mundane for all you pujaris who are very extremely spiritual personalities, but I'll get to a spiritual point in a second. So, then I attended some training sessions, in fact, some intensive training sessions with Marsha Rosenberg, who passed away a number of years ago, and learned a lot about the application of need-based psychology to life in general, or to interactions between different individuals, and also conflicts that we experience internally. So, I was thinking, how does this apply to Krishna consciousness? So then I was reading one of the books by Bhaktivinoda Thakur called the Chaitanya Shikshamrita. And in this particular book, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about basic needs that we all have. Needs like food, water, light, shelter, fun. You know, I know that sounds really amazing to have a sannyasi talk about fun. Or even love. You know, have a sannyasi talk about love. And I'm not talking about romantic love right now. That's not really the point. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was talking about this and stating that it's necessary to meet one's basic needs if one wants to progress on the path of devotional service. And at the same time, I remembered Srila Prabhupada's statements in the eighth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the context of the Gajendra Mokshana story. Now, many of you are familiar with the Gajendra Mokshana. That means Gajendra is the elephant. And the elephant, Gajendra, who was previously King Indrajunya, was fighting a crocodile in the water. And as he was fighting the crocodile in the water, the crocodile was winning. And so, while the crocodile was winning, Gajendra, who previously was King Indrajunya, remembered his previous life in which he was King Indrajunya. And he began to pray to Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu appeared. And Lord Vishnu cut off the head of the crocodile and saved Gajendra, the elephant. Now, Prabhupada talks or mentions in his purport, using this as a metaphor, he says that when one wants to fight Maya, and that's pretty hard to fight Maya, because Mama Maya Durachaya, as Krishna says in the Gita, Maya is very difficult to overcome, and it actually belongs to Krishna, and no one can actually fight Maya. But really what Prabhupada was indicating, if one wants to remain aloof from the material energy and progress spiritually, one needs to fight from a natural position. And I'm paraphrasing what Prabhupada said. Natural position means, and Prabhupada there in that purport was indicating one's proper varna and one's proper ashram. Okay, varna ashram. And in this way, one will be able to progress slowly and surely on the path of devotional service and reach the ultimate goal. Now, this also reminded me about a story that I learned when I was a child. And this is the story of the tortoise and the hare. So those of you who don't know what a tortoise is a turtle, a hare is a rabbit. So the tortoise and the hare, or the rabbit and the turtle, had a race. And when they were racing, the rabbit, which is naturally faster than the tortoise, decided that basically I'm much better than the tortoise, I can win the race. So he decided to take a little nap in the middle of the race, and the tortoise proceeded step by step, slowly and slowly, and reached the goal before the rabbit or the hare reached the goal. And so the tortoise won. So the moral of the story, the reason I'm telling that story, is that we need to understand our basic needs, which Srila Prabhupada indicated in that purport, which Bhaktivedanta Thakur indicates in the Chaitanya Shikshamrita. We need to understand and make strategies to fulfill our basic needs so that we can progress in devotional service step by step, rather than, as Prabhupada said, big belly, big monkey, Ceylon jumping melancholy. And of course, that's in reference to people who want to imitate Hanuman. Hanuman, of course, is the servant of Lord Ram. And Hanuman, he was able to jump to Lanka. Now, if we try to imitate Hanuman, then we will fall flat on our bellies or flat on our face or faces. So, therefore, we have to understand who we are, our limitations, and also what needs we have so that we can continue in Krishna consciousness in a deliberate fashion, step by step. And there's a problem that many of us have, is that we're in denial of basic needs. And this causes, the problem is that it causes some psychological imbalance, emotional imbalance, and maybe ultimately a fall down from devotional service. Because many of us think or feel that we are more advanced than we actually are, and we don't have basic needs, and we're like the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. You know, we have these role models. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan, we have a role model, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. And we think, all right, let me imitate him. Let me be more specific about this. That may mean, you know, eating very little, engaging in harsh austerities. Right now it's Kartik. So devotees have a natural inclination to perform special austerities during Kartik. Of course, I remember the one austerity that devotees tried to do when Prabhupada was present, the men at least, they were growing their beards. And they thought, oh, this is Kartik. And Prabhupada called that and started, actually Chaturmasya. And Prabhupada said it's Chaturmes when they look like that with their beards. So, you know, we have this natural inclination. And everybody, every one of us would like to think we're very advanced in devotional service. You know, I realize my spiritual identity. I'm a coward boy, I'm a gopi, or whatever I am. And this is hubris, this is false pride, and also leads to denial of basic needs. And I remember when I first joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement over 50 years ago, that I thought that I was on a very high level of devotional service and didn't have any basic needs. And so I thought that I had realized my spiritual identity after 3 days in the Krishna Consciousness Movement. Myself and the other brahmacharis would look at each other and say, yes, we're all coward boys in the spiritual world. and we have no material attachment anymore or material needs. So that's a great danger. So we need to be honest with ourselves as far as our needs. And talking about needs, Maslow, who is a psychologist, gave us what's called a pyramid or a triangle of needs that every human being has. And interestingly enough, even though Maslow was not a devotee, he had at the top of the pyramid something called self-actualization, which is, I guess we can equate it with Krishna consciousness, because if one wants to understand the self, one has to also understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because we are part and parcel of Krishna, Mami Vamsa Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. So, let me describe that pyramid for a second. But before I describe the pyramid, I want to read a quote from Maslow that sort of corroborates what I just said. I printed this out for all of you. Where he talks about people who think that they're more advanced spiritually than they are and in denial of their basic needs. And this is really appropriate to many of us in spiritual life. And his comment was not about members of the Krishna Conscious Movement. His comment was about religions or religious people in general. And religious people in general suffer from certain dynamics or challenges, and it's not only in the Krishna Conscious Movement that we suffer from these things, but we are religious people, or trying to be religious people, so we have these same dynamics. Let me read this quote, which is quite interesting, and I'll sort of unpack it. A kind of pseudo-growth. Pseudo-growth means false growth, that one thinks that one's growing when one's not growing, spiritually that is. A kind of pseudo-growth takes place very commonly when a person tries by repression. Repression means you have some basic need and you just like push it down and denial about it. And then he says the second part is denial. Reaction formation. Reaction formation means your basic need comes out in a different way so you can't identify it. For example, let's say you didn't get enough sleep and then you're angry as anything. So that's reaction formation. To convince himself or herself that an ungratified basic need, that means a need that you have not dealt with, that you're not making a strategy to fulfill, has really been gratified. In other words, you convince yourself, I don't have a need for sleep. Let's get more specific, because actually we're talking about pujaris here. And many pujaris get too little sleep. It's a very common thing. For example, you have this last RT, sometimes it takes, you stay up until about 10 o'clock sometimes, certain temples, not every temple, you stay up till 10 o'clock, and then you have to wake the deities up the next morning. Now, you may think that, you know, this is spiritual, Krishna will protect me, like that, and I got news for you. There's the material energy. It functions in a certain way. You get too little sleep. I mean, of course, you may get angry. That may be one evidence that you got too little sleep. But there are other things that will happen that may be even more dangerous. More dangerous means, let me explain, more dangerous things that can happen. For example, your immune system will be depleted, and now with this COVID thing, you may get very sick. And another thing that's even more dangerous than COVID is that you may be driving a car. And we've experienced this with some of the European pujaris and in America too, that you may be driving a car, you know, in your service to Krishna, and then you fall asleep while driving a car. When I was a new devotee, we would sleep at every red light. I was so tired all the time from serving Krishna that I would sleep at, like when the light was red, I was driving, stop the car, go to sleep, and I was woken up by the horns from the cars behind me. And how many devotees have we lost because they fell asleep while driving and crashed and died because they didn't get enough sleep at night? There's so many problems that can occur from not getting enough sleep. And at the same time, we feel guilty. We hear all these statements. Sleep is maya, sleep is illusion, one shouldn't sleep more than 6 hours a night. Actually, there are statements by Prabhupada that if one's driving, one should sleep more. Because when Prabhupada was present, many devotees passed away from car accidents because of the lack of sleep. So there's an instance, where if we don't satisfy a basic need, we end up in trouble. Or we make mistakes when we're overtired. Or we haven't eaten enough. But we take quotes out of context. Certain things Prabhupada said out of context, we apply it to ourselves, we think we're more advanced, and then we end up in trouble. It's not only sleeping, it's eating. Like if we eat too little, of course Krishna says in the Gita, the yogi should not eat too much, not eat too little, mityahara viharasya, should be moderate in his eating, his or her eating. So, getting on with this quote, we convince ourselves that the ungratified basic need has not been gratified or doesn't exist. He then permits himself or herself to grow on to higher level needs. In other words, yes, I just have to be Krishna conscious, this sleep, this need for friendship, this need for love, this need for understanding. I'm going to go over the basic needs in a second, which of course forever, these needs exist, which of course forever rest on a very shaky foundation. In other words, your Krishna consciousness rests on a very shaky foundation. I would say that this is one of the main causes of devotees falling down from the Krishna consciousness movement. Not being aware of basic needs, thinking themselves more advanced, undergoing austerities, which they're not ready to undergo, physically, mentally, psychologically ready to undergo. So the end of the quote is, he says, I call this pseudo-growth by bypassing the ungratified need. Such a need, bypassing means just like go around it, not thinking you have it. Such a need perseverates forever. In other words, it doesn't go away. As an unconscious force, that means you're not aware of this force, and sometimes it's expressed as repetition compulsive, which was, that someone becomes compulsive, obsessive compulsive is the same thing. And you've seen this many times. I've seen it many times. Anyway, so this is the quote. So what do we need to do, first of all, internally with ourselves? And then we'll talk about the external world of dealing with other devotees. Internally, we need to become aware and not be embarrassed because we have basic needs. And we all have those needs. That may come as a shock to you. We all have needs, and certain needs are more important than other needs because they haven't been gratified. But we all have basic needs. Getting back to needs, let's talk about them. There's the basic needs like food, obviously, water, shelter, air. Like if you take any of those things away from me, I'm not going to be able to function in Krishna consciousness. Or if you take my air away, I'm not going to be able to breathe. So if you take any of those things away, And, you know, how am I going to be able to speak about Krishna? How am I going to be able to chant Krishna's holy names? So then you get on to some higher needs. And this is not necessarily an order of the needs, but I'm just throwing them out. And I don't have a chart here. I have a chart, but I don't have time to show it. So then you get into higher needs like recreation, or to pronounce it a different way is recreation. In other words, you need a time when you can relax and do something that's just for relaxation. And I'm not talking about some thing that's against Krishna consciousness. I'm talking about relaxation and friendship. These are other needs. And love. And as I mentioned before, it's not a romantic thing that I'm discussing, although you may take that as a strategy for your own self. But we have, like Prabhupada says, society, friendship, and love just finally bestowed by God upon man. So we have a need for loving relationships. And we have a need for autonomy. Autonomy means to make our own decisions, not simply to be like under authority all the time. I mean, I hear this, I mentioned this previously, it's not going to go over too well with all of you, but many times I run into devotees and one of the first things devotees say to each other, well, many times I run into devotees, that means all day long I'm running into devotees. Devotees say to each other is, who is your authority? Now that really, I guess because of my need for independence, my need for independent thinking, Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness meant for independent thinking, you know, it sort of irks me. I mean, of course we cooperate. You know, Prabhupada said love and cooperation, but it's not slavery. This independent thinking, Prabhupada wanted independent thinking. Prabhupada said blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. It's Bhagavad Gita, one of the purports. So Prabhupada wanted independent thinking. Krishna wants independent thinking. Let's relate to the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna presents the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, obviously, and everything in the Bhagavad Gita. And at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, or the discussion between Krishna and Arjuna, Krishna says to Arjuna, you choose. You choose whether you want to fight or not fight. Krishna's not forcing Arjuna. You know, he's the guru, so to speak, of Arjuna. But there's no question of force. He's not saying, Arjuna, you fight or you're going to hell. I mean, we hear this in many religions. You join a religion because you're afraid of going to hell, or you want to go to heaven is one of the two things. So, no, he doesn't say that. He says, now that you've heard this whole philosophy, you choose. And of course, Arjuna makes the right choice, and he chooses what? To fight and to please the Supreme. But Arjuna could have chosen not to fight. That free will is there. The living entity chose to come to the material world. Oftentimes, people ask me the question, why didn't Krishna take away our free will? Why didn't Krishna force us to surrender? Well, practically speaking, if we didn't have free will, we wouldn't be part and parcel of Krishna. We wouldn't be living entities. We'd simply be machines, like my computer that I'm using here. It definitely doesn't have free will, although sometimes it seems to have free will. So therefore, that's our nature, to have some autonomy. Let's relate this, which I just did yesterday in a previous discussion, to children. For those of you who have children or have seen children, you know that when children reach the ripe old age of 2 years old, they embark upon a stage known as the terrible twos. So what I'm saying, it's not terrible twos, it's nice twos, because the child is exhibiting its, well, his or her, need for independence, making their own choices in life. Like if you treat people or treat children in such a way that you don't give them that independence, you make all the choices for them, then what happens is that someone becomes incapable of making their own choices later on. That's a common dynamic that occurs not only in religious institutions, but also occurs in the military or any total organizations where there's authority who just like controls someone 24/7, whether it's a mother or a temple president or whatever, who controls someone 24/7, and then later on, after a few years, they become incapable of functioning and their moral compass becomes dysfunctional. They can't make choices between right and wrong anymore because they've had that faculty taken away from them. So getting back to the need. So we have a need for autonomy to make our own decisions, to be, just like if you're Pujaris, you have a need to be able to express yourself with limitations on the altar. I mean, obviously, you don't want to, which has happened before, you don't want to dress Radha and Krishna like Mr. and Mrs. Santa Claus, which has happened in certain places. I mean, there's limitations, but there's artistic freedom. And if the head pujari becomes too heavy and takes away that artistic freedom within certain limitations, obviously, then at that point, the person becomes either discouraged or loses their sense of individuality. And it's a very important point. Now, or like, let's give you an example of myself. I used to do a lot of pujari work and dress the deities and everything like that. And I dressed in such a fashion that the head pujari did not appreciate. In fact, she got so upset that after I finished dressing the deities, after I left the temple room, she would actually dress them again. And that really was not so encouraging for me. Of course, now I've resolved that conflict. But, you know, it's a fact. So there has to be a certain amount of autonomy that we give devotees who are working with us, particularly if you're head pujaris. And if you, I mean, obviously you have to stick to the standards, punctuality, cleanliness. I mean, Prabhupada stressed that with pujari work, or with deity service. At the same time, you know, there has to be autonomy. So we respect that autonomy. Anyway, so internally, we're talking internally. So we have to be aware of our need for autonomy. We have to be aware of our need for fun, our need for recreation, our need for love, loving relationships, all these different needs are needs for authenticity, which means telling the truth, particularly those who are pujaris or Brahmins. So, samadhamaktapaksho chamshantiradhyamevajaya, etc. They're supposed to be functioning as Brahmins. So that means they have a need for truth, to tell the truth, to speak the truth, to be authentic. And then we have a need for meaning in life. Meaning, of course, means our meaning of life, hopefully, is to be Krishna conscious. Hopefully, to please Srila Prabhupada and to serve Srila Prabhupada society. Just like if someone were to ask me, what is my meaning in life? I'm a servant of Prabhupada. That's my identification. Because everyone has different identifications. And we speak about this often when we're presenting Krishna consciousness to people in the beginning, that we have these upadis, these different designations, you know, I'm white, I'm black, I'm male, I'm female, I'm American, I'm Russian, I'm whatever. We have all these different designations. But sarvapadi vinir muktam tatpatatvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhakta uchate. We're meant to give them those designations up by identifying ourselves as servants of our spiritual master and servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, and ultimately Radha and Krishna, and Srila Prabhupada's society. So there's a sense of self-identification, which is really important. And ultimately, there's a need for Krishna consciousness. So internally, it means becoming aware, not being embarrassed about your particular needs. If you're tired, you have a need for rest. If you're hungry, you have a need for food. And unfortunately, sometimes in devotee societies, there's this embarrassment. So we shouldn't really be concerned. If we are functioning in Krishna consciousness and we have some basic human needs, for example, every day, I exercise at least for an hour a day. And I have this watch and tells me I have to do 10,000 steps every day because I have a need for health so I can serve Krishna. So I do things deliberately to fulfill needs. Those are strategies to fulfill needs. Okay, so that's on a personal basis. Then we can proceed very nicely, step by step, to become completely Krishna conscious. And then we won't fall down if we're aware of those needs. And also, you know, avoid bad association, a satsanga tyaga, Vaishnava tyaga. You got all these different statements in shastras, but we're not dealing with that particularly now. We're talking about needs. Because we want to remain. Like Prabhupada said one time, don't be surprised by who leaves, be surprised by who stays. Because when you join the Krishna conscious movement, it's like declaring war on Krishna's illusory energy. And so you have to understand the practical process given to us by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and others how to deal with this illusory energy. And we do have these needs. All right. So then we'll talk about interpersonal stuff. That means dealing with others. Other people have needs too. And everyone, including us, at all times is functioning to fulfill different needs. Like I mentioned right now, I'm functioning to fulfill my need to serve Srila Prabhupada's institutions. And Nrisimha Kovacha asked me, you know, to speak to the Pujaris. And, you know, he's my old friend. And I also have a need for friendship, so he likes me. And so I'm acting to fulfill, and basically the need to serve Prabhupada's movement, because I'm a servant. That's how I identify myself. Okay. So everyone at all times is acting to fulfill a need. Not only every human being, but every living entity. That is, animals, plants, everything. Like you see, plants, if you've ever observed a plant, it actually, or a flower or whatever, and it turns itself around to meet the sun. So it needs the sunshine. We also need sunshine. So you shouldn't be inside all day long, or else you're going to suffer from what's called SAD, seasonal affective depression. So everyone should get sunshine. So the plant is functioning to fulfill certain needs. The animals, whether it's a tiger or bear or whatever animals you have there, or boar, is functioning to fulfill needs, what need for food. So human beings are like that too. So when we're dealing with other people, which is quite often, we should understand that when someone does something that may stimulate some displeasure on our own parts, that person is simply acting to fulfill their needs, which is interesting. In other words, instead of labeling the person, let's say you're a Pujari, let's we're going to use a particular context, and that Pujari happens to be late for every RT that they're doing. So why are they late? And how do you get them on time, or how do you encourage them to be on time? That's a big question. So you approach them instead of telling them, you are lazy, you're a bum, I mean, this, we put a label on them sometimes when someone is habitually late for doing RT. Spaced out, lazy, inattentive. And then we see them through that label instead of approaching them as a person to try to understand them, which is much more effective strategy. Because the more you tell someone or think of someone in a particular way, the more they'll tend to act in that way. And they believe it. Even if it wasn't true in the beginning, you just repeat something, it actually becomes accepted ultimately. So let's say, all right, this Bajori is late. So how would I deal with it? I would sit down with that Bajori rather than just like making a label or a diagnosis of the person, which we're very prone to do, and ask them about their life. I said, you know, I noticed you were late yesterday. You're going to say always late is like a designation. You were late yesterday and the day before for the RT. Would you be willing to share with me what's happening? And then the person would explain, you know, whatever is the dynamic in their particular life, that they have some health challenges or whatever like that. And then you would understand them in terms of their needs being met or needs not being met. And you would connect with them. And it's more likely by your connecting with them and understanding, because one of the main needs that people have is for understanding. And maybe the person was late all the time because they want to be understood. And not only that, you'll help them understand their own needs and also the need to connect to Krishna, which is being on time, punctual, as we mentioned before, which is a very important principle in deity worship. So, and they're more likely to actually be on time in the future. So you may say it's a strategy. It's not really a strategy for management, because the real important thing, you know, let's talk about deity worship in general and human relationships also. But the real important thing is to serve the Vaishnavas. Because if one simply does deity worship and doesn't respect the Vaishnavas, doesn't communicate or connect with the Vaishnavas, Lord Kapiladev says their deity worship doesn't work. He uses the expression, it's like offering oblations to ashes, which is not a really good idea. Because the deity, Krishna, it reciprocates with you based on your devotion. And if you don't serve the deities nicely, I don't serve the Vaishnavas nicely, Radha and Krishna are not going to be pleased with you. And I'll give you an example in my own interactions with His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. One time I was sitting in Srila Prabhupada's room, and a group of devotees who had just come back from traveling Sankirtan came in to see Srila Prabhupada. And they were describing not just their Sankirtan, but they were describing their interactions with a particular temple, a particular Gaudiya temple they had visited. So they said, we went to this particular Gaudiya temple and we saw the deities in the temple, but the devotees didn't treat us very nicely. They didn't give us prasadam or whatever. They treated us very badly. And then Prabhupada, but they said, you know, but the deities were very beautiful. And Prabhupada said, there is no deity. And that was shocking to me, to hear Prabhupada say that. There is no deity. And then the devotees thought they were going to correct Srila Prabhupada. They said to Srila Prabhupada, but Prabhupada, we saw the deities. And Prabhupada said, you heard what I'm saying. In a very strong voice, Prabhupada said, you heard what I'm saying. There is no deity. And so I was thinking, oh my God, what is Prabhupada indicating here? You know, Prabhupada extremely strong in that particular case. And then Prabhupada told this story, which I'm sure you've all heard before. Prabhupada spoke a little Bengali, and he said, that is the statement they're using the Shalagram Shila to crack nuts with. Now, don't picture that in your mind. That's a horrendous thought, that someone is using a Shalagram Shila to crack nuts with. I was right there in Prabhupada's room, so I'm a witness to that particular occasion. And my understanding was that Prabhupada was indicating that Krishna is there and Krishna is accepting the devotee's reciprocation because Krishna is pleased. In the Bhagavad Gita we find that one offers a little fruit, water, etc. to Krishna with love and devotion. Not just you offer to Krishna like that. No, it's you have to have love and devotion. Without love and devotion, you know, there's no offering. Krishna will reject, or Radharani will reject the offering that's made to Krishna. So what pleases Krishna practically more than anything else, you know, as stated in the Adi Purana, that Krishna says, one who says he is my devotee is not my devotee, but one who says he is a devotee of my devotee is my devotee. So what pleases the deity, what pleases Krishna, is the pleasing relationships we have with the devotees. And also all living entities. You know, Prabhupada was loving towards all living entities. There's that story Shrutakirti tells, how Prabhupada was concerned about a bug that was on his flower garland. He wanted the bug put outside so the bug could actually have something to eat. So anyway, that's really the point, that it's important in our deity worship that we have loving relationships with the devotees. And loving relationships means we connect with them. We don't label them. We don't demand things from them. But we understand devotional service is voluntary. And someone has needs. Pujaris have needs. That's really important to understand. I mean, of course, we have a strict schedule with the deities, but we have to be aware of our needs and work with both things simultaneously. And that's how we should deal with each other. And when we can deal with each other, then we can have these loving relationships that will be very pleasing to the deities and very pleasing to Krishna. So, actually, in this talk, I've given a brief overview of what empathic communication is. Need-based. Everybody functions based on needs. And the reason we have certain feelings are because of needs that are met or needs that are not met. As simple as that. And then we need to deal with our own needs first before we can be compassionate and empathic with others. And we should be willing to sit down and understand others' needs and facilitate, not tell them what to do, facilitate them in developing strategies to fulfill their needs. I mean, there's a lot more information on empathic communication. If anyone's interested, I published a book on empathic communication, which is available on Amazon in Europe, Amazon in the United States, and actually all over the world. And I can give the people information, give you all information about it later on. But that's the very essence. Need-based, based upon Bhaktivinoda Thakur's teachings, Srila Prabhupada's statements, the teachings of different psychologists. And I've applied in my own life, and I'm very happy in Krishna consciousness. And you will also be happy if you can do that and focus on your ultimate goal of going back to home, back to Godhead. So, does anyone have any questions? I want to leave time open for questions. Nishinga Kavacha, anybody have any questions?
Merely Manohar has put his hand up.
Okay. So, yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for a really wonderful presentation. It was very interesting to hear, very deep. So thank you very much. I just, one question. Often we see pujaris, the amount of they have, what a situation that that they are in, they are forced not to be able to take care of the needs. And it can, like, one doing so much service for years, and they don't have much choice. Address that where devotees are kind of don't have time because of the service, the pressure of service? What perhaps, how should they approach that? Or
that's a very difficult situation. And what happens in many cases, the Pujari ultimately is not able to continue after a few years in such a situation. Either they have a health breakdown or a psychological breakdown or a spiritual breakdown. Because one need I left out when my discussion of needs is actually regularly reading Srila Prabhupada's books and hearing Krishna Katha. And I've seen that sometimes the Pujaris are so much engaged in deity worship that they don't do that regular aspect of sadhana. I mean, sure, they chant their rounds, but the regular aspect of sadhana, of hearing from Prabhupada and connecting and remembering what our goal is, you know, why are we doing what we're doing? I actually wanted to talk about this, and I'll get on to answering your question in a second, that oftentimes in our activities, not only Pujari work, but whatever we're doing, whether it's cooking or anything that's repetitive, we tend to forget the reason why we're doing it. And this, of course, is described by Rupa Goswami as what? Niyam Agraha. Niyamagraha means doing your activity, but just doing it on automatic pilot. Automatic pilot means like a pilot flies a plane, and when he's flying the plane, he just turns on this machine so he doesn't have to be aware of what he's doing. So I'm sure that many of you Pujaris have experienced that when you keep doing the same thing every day, your mind tends to go elsewhere and not remember why you're doing the RT. You're just doing the RT, and it's just like, I'm doing it, but your mind's thinking of something else. So this is detrimental to devotional service, and anyway, it's very displeasing to Krishna. So the question is, you know, you have all these things that have to be done every day. So there's several different things that you can do in response to that. One is, you just beg for help. And sometimes there's no help. Sometimes there's been so many devotees, so many deities installed in your temple. And we've had that in America, that because of different things that happened in the movement after Prabhupada left the planet, there are more deities than devotees in many temples. And then the Pujari is just like really having to run around, do this and that. So therefore, that becomes a responsibility of the temple president, and then the GBC has to make sure. So the Pujari is not alone. They have to go to whoever is supervising their activities or responsible for their activities, and ultimately the GBC is responsible for what's happening. That's what GBC or regional secretary, and something has to be done. Or you may have to go to Nishinaya Gavacha, the deity worship minister, or the local deity worship minister, and find out a way that, and you know, we don't like to do this, but sometimes Pujari service, it has to be reduced. Sometimes to save the life of the Pujari. I mean, I don't like to do that. I've never done that myself, never had to reduce the deity worship. Here we have beautiful Radha Krishna deities here that have been worshipped, and we're very punctual. I always insist on punctuality and cleanliness and nice boga offerings and flowers and everything like that. But sometimes if it's an extreme case, because you won't have a Pujari after some time, then you're going to end up trying to have uninitiated or first initiated devotees doing things, which is really you don't want to do. So sometimes reduction has to be there, as long as cleanliness and punctuality. Taking advice of Nrisimha Gavacha and the deity worship minister, but at a certain point you have to be vulnerable enough to just explain, I can't go on like this. I just can't go on. You know, just like, you know, we don't want to lose more devotees because of burnout. And so one has to have a balanced life, and you just basically, and if let's say if your temple president says you have to do it, that's not the right response. You don't have to. You're choosing to do things. And I'm not saying you say, no, I'm not going to do it, but you just, at a certain point, you have to be really honest. It's not working, and I can't continue, and you have to stay. I know Nishikant Kovach is not going to like me for this, but you have to stand your ground and say, I can only do this amount of service. And I allow that for devotees here. If someone says, you know, they're exhausted, something happens, okay, take a week off. Or like I said, I've never had to reduce service, but you just have to tell, you know, your so-called authority or whatever they are, that I'm not going to do it. I can't continue. You know, you're only human. You're only human. I mean, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But you're only human. I'm only human. I can only function anyway in certain ways. I mean, I tell people that. I say no all the time to people. I tried saying no to Nishikant Kovach for like several months for doing the seminar. It just didn't work. But ultimately, if I want to say no, I'll say no. And I don't really... Ultimately, I do care what people think. But ultimately, I have to take care of myself, too. So, I mean, I hope I gave you some advice in this regard. But sometimes it's required to reduce, sometimes...
Thank you much.
Yeah, sometimes it's required to tell the temple president something. Okay.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, Maharaj, because there are some pujaris on the call who have shared that kind of information with me, and I'm the first one to support them. Because what's the use of maintaining a standard if you lose the pujari?
Yeah.
If you can actually nurture the pujaris, then there's the hope in the future you can actually return the standard to what it was. But if you lose the pujari, it's gone. They're gone, and you probably never get the standard back to what it was before. So the most important is our people. We have to look after them. And that's why we do the sanghas, is to look after people and to nurture them in their service.
That's good. And then you'll never make any new devotees, because you tell people, join the Krishna Conscious Movement and become happy. And then they walk into the temple and they see the pujari, who looks like he hasn't slept for the last 3 years. And he looks like a Halloween costume. I don't know if you know what Halloween is. Anyway. So, do you have Halloween in Europe? No, probably not. Anyway.
Yes, we do much. We do, yeah.
You do. All right. So, I mean, so, you know, people come, they want to see everybody happy. You know, join the movement and become hippies to happies, Prabhupada told us, not hippies to miseries. So, yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Nishikant Kovach, for supporting the pujaris in this way, because it's always been a very big concern of mine, especially making sure pujaris get enough sleep at night. That's one of the main things.
Okay. Any other questions for Maharaj? Yeah, Shama Priya Maharaj.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much for your time and presentation. I have one question within my heart which I would like to clear, that if someone is serving Krishna or thinking that they are serving Krishna sincerely, or is it... a false pride, or that I'm advanced, how are there any parameters to understand, to self-check that I'm going on the wrong path, or how to understand that is one of my questions, if you could please.
Okay. I think the best way is to understand that we do have basic needs and not be embarrassed about them, be what we call vulnerable enough to admit to ourselves and admit to others that we have these basic needs. And yes, it is false pride to think that one is more advanced than they actually are. I mean, if one is actually advanced in devotional service, one will not think that they're advanced. You know, that's one of the symptoms. Like you have Bhaktivinoda Thakur pray that, O Gopinath, I'm a materialistic rascal. Mamanavedana Shuno. So we should think like that, you know, that I'm... have all these material needs, I'm not on a very high level of devotional service. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's nothing wrong with admitting that you're subject to Maya sometimes. I mean, it's really refreshing to be able to do that. I mean, for example, let me give you one example of myself being in Maya. And I don't care, I can talk about it. Because I'm not... All right, so once upon a time, several weeks ago, a devotee let me drive their car that was a fast car. So, being in Maya and having a need for fun, I got in the car and drove it twice the speed limit just to have fun. And so what happened is that I saw some flashing lights behind me and the police pulled me over. I almost had a nervous breakdown because, you know, I don't like to be pulled over by the police. And it became a very expensive endeavor to keep my license. I had to hire lawyers and everything like that. So anyway, so I was doing something to fulfill my needs. Basically, I had a material need for fun, which I was trying to fulfill by speeding in the car, which was not a good strategy at that particular point. So, you know, we can admit it. I mean, if I have some material needs, I'll admit it. I like tasty prasadam. Prabhupada admitted it. Prabhupada said when they tried to feed him just boiled food, he said, let the starvation committee go to hell. He said, you know, it's better to eat tasty prasadam. So why don't you just be honest about it? I mean, we try to portray ourselves, particularly if you get in a position like mine, you know, where you're sannyasi and a guru, then there's an inclination to portray yourself as being more advanced than you actually are. And I've given up on that. I just want to be honest, you know, whoever I am, you know, I'm Prabhupada's servant, I'm serving Prabhupada's movement, my life is dedicated to Prabhupada's movement, but, you know, I do have a need for fun, I have a need for recreation, I have a need for so many things, and I make strategies to fulfill these needs, and my life is very balanced. And I know when to say no, not just in Pujari work, but, you know, people ask me all the time to give seminars, to go online, and do this, do that. And 90% of the time I'm saying no because I have different needs in my service, you know, connected to my service. All my needs are connected to serving so I can be functional and serve Krishna. Okay, who else has a question?
Vaini Madhava's got a hand raised as well.
Okay.
She's the translator for our devotees from the CIS.
Okay.
Yes, I can hear you because I'm on the English channel. I think everyone needs to be on the English.
Maharaj, can you hear?
I can hear. But I can't hear anything else.
Maharaj, if you go down the bottom where it says interpretation and click on select English.
Oh, sorry. I do speak English.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I can hear you now. Okay, that's a very good question. Desires are planned strategies or actual strategies to fulfill certain needs. So the desires are unlimited. As we know from the Bhagavad Gita, avritam ganam tena ganino nichavayana kamakrupena kantiya dushparena lena cha. It's, you know, the more you want, the more you do want. The more you get, the more you want. So, when we have a desire for something, we have to, using empathic communication, and I'm just trying to explain very, very quickly, we connect it with a need. In other words, okay, here's the strategy. So, let's say I have a desire for pizza. My mind, you know, I don't right now. But anyway, let's say if I had a desire for pizza, the desire comes out. So, okay. So then I think, why do I have this desire for pizza? The why question is very important throughout our lives. As I mentioned, while you're doing the Pujari work, you should be thinking, why am I doing what I'm doing? When you're chanting Sankalpa, why am I doing what I'm doing? You know, why am I chanting? Why have I decided to chant? If you don't ask why, it's Nimagraha. So let's say my desire for pizza. And I think, why? Well, I need tasty food. You know, that's a need. So using the word why, we can drill down. And it may be several levels of drilling down. I may say, I want pizza. Why? Because I like pizza. Why? Because pizza has cheese. Why? You know, and several whys before you actually get to the point is, you know, I need some tasty food. So that's one thing. So it's a desire. Okay. So, but maybe that desire isn't so useful because it may not be good for my health. So then I think in terms. Now this requires a lot of practice. And that's why we have our practice groups. One of the devotees who's on with us is actually a fantastic teacher. I don't know if Sri Radhika is still there. Hopefully she's still
I'm there. I'm here, Maharaj, but with your blessings, I can be a fantastic teacher.
All right, so she's been working with me for a number of years, and we've done extensive training. And so she runs these practice groups where we practice being empathic with each other and with ourselves, and it's really wonderful. So she has many of these different practice groups. Anyone's interested in contacting her, I'm sure she'll be happy, or I'm not sure.
Yes, Maharaj.
So you see it, she has this picture of herself having fun. Anyway, so she's a very nice disciple of Romapad Maharaj who actually has been attending my seminars for a number of years, and she's quite expert. So anyway, in a nutshell, what I would do is say, yes, I have a need for tasty food, but at the same time, my need to be healthy, and I'm not speaking against pizza here, please don't get me wrong. You know, if there's any Italians online, I'm sure they'll hate me for this. But I have a need to be healthy. So eating pizza is not really going to be so good for my health. Just using a hypothetical example, it's nothing against pizza. Just have to clarify that. It's not going to be good for my health. So let me pick a strategy that is actually not conflicting with other needs. Like, for example, my strategy of racing a car conflicted with my need, well, for protect Krishna's money, conflicted with other needs. So it's really a holistic thing. We think of all, what I do is I think of all my needs and connect everything to the ultimate need of Krishna consciousness, but it takes some practice. But you arrive at a very well-balanced life. Instead of calling yourself names, you know, like we normally do, I just mentioned previously in this discussion that sometimes when dealing with other pujaris or other devotees, we put a name on them and we just see them through that static label. But we shouldn't do that with ourselves either. You know, all right, I want pizza. I'm just a lusty dog. You know, I can put that name on myself. But no, I have a need, and the pizza may not be the right strategy for fulfilling my need, but there is a strategy if I think very clearly, sometimes we say outside the box, you know, some unique strategy that will help me fulfill a particular need. So it requires some thoughtfulness in dealing with needs. But our needs need to be fulfilled if we want to be stable and steady in Krishna consciousness, or happy. Prabhupada wants us to be happy. Prabhupada said to one temple president, your business is making sure that everyone's jolly and gets enough prasadam. Jolly means not just like, okay, I like Krishna consciousness, but jolly means like jumping up and down in ecstasy. Prabhupada loved to see people jump up and down in ecstasy. I remember kirtans where, of course, Brahmananda was there in front of Prabhupada, and Brahmananda was, you know, challenged horizontally, that's politically correct language, and Prabhupada just motioned, you know, jump, 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 jump. And then he started jumping. Of course, when he started jumping, everybody jumped, but and the floor of the room started bouncing too. So Prabhupada really wanted us all to be really jolly. And Prabhupada said, jolly and plenty of prasadam, two things. That's the business of the temple president. So that's the manager's business. Happier devotee, more happier devotees, you know, which I guess is our strategic mission statement. More devotees and happier devotees. So, so it requires some thought in order to be happy in Krishna consciousness. And not doing things because you have to, doing things because you choose to. Now, it requires changing the mindset sometimes. Let's say I have to wake up the deities at 4 o'clock in the morning, 3:30 in the morning, whatever it is. So, yes, the deities should be woken up at 3 o'clock or 4, whatever time it is. But instead of thinking have to, you think I'm choosing to. I'm choosing to because it fulfills my need to connect to Krishna, it fulfills my need to please Prabhupada, it fulfills my need to advance spiritually, whatever your need is. This why principle is an individual thing. Deciding on why you do something, that's up to you. Your motivation has to be individual based upon your needs. It can't be, it's not a generic why you're waking up the deities. But you have to have a why when you wake up the deities, when you chant your rounds, when you eat prasadam. Otherwise it's a life on automatic pilot. So, hope that answers that question. So, any other questions? Nishin Kavacha, any other?
No, I thought that was fantastic, Maharaj. I really do appreciate your willingness to come and present to the devotees and share your passion for caring for devotees with us all. And appreciate Sri Radhika joining the call as well. It was unexpected, but most welcome. Any final questions for Maharaj before he goes back to his morning program?
God, the morning program's over. I missed Damodar Ashtaka. I'm really upset. I need to connect with Lord Damodar. And this is Kartik.
You connected with 37 of his devotees.
Okay, you satisfy my need. Okay. Maybe I can just put a plug in for my book.
Please do. And if you share the link with me on our conference.
Let me get a copy and show it. Oh, one second.
Thank you for Prabhu for allowing me to join.
Harry Paul. Oh, my pleasure. Is that you at the front of the boat?
Yes.
So here is my book. This is translated in Russian, Spanish, German. Maybe
it's translated into Australian.
What?
Is it translated into Australian?
No, because you're also uneducated. You can't read anyway. So, anyway, it's in German, Spanish, Russian, etc. As e-books. Only English, it's in a printed volume. And it's available on Amazon.com. It's not a profit item. I just want to distribute it. Anyone who wants the ebook, I could send to them for free. I'm not charging, in different languages.
Okay, well, what I can do is on our WhatsApp group, I'll ask anyone who wants it, and then I'll communicate with you, and you can share that with us. That'd be great.
Yeah, well, maybe it's better if I share it with you, and then you can share it with people on your WhatsApp group. So all those different languages, German too, actually German too.
Yeah, we've got a few German devotees on the call as well. Fantastic.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much.
Sorry.
All glories to Lord Damodar, who I didn't get a chance to worship today.
Serving all his devotees. Thank you, Maharaj. Appreciate it.
All right, you've got to invite me over for prasadam next time I'm in Australia now.
The government lets you in.
All right, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much for letting me serve.